Science and Technology.
Psychiatry. Coming into focus. Researchers are starting to question if ADHD should be seen as a disorder.
It is like being inside a pinball machine with 100 balls, says Lucy. Three inner monologues, says Philip. Like several tracks playing at the same time, says Sarah. This is how people with attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, or ADHD, describe what is going on in their heads at any given moment. With so many thoughts jostling for attention, it is a struggle to concentrate. Appointments fly by, relationships founder, feelings of inadequacy, alongside anxiety and depression, start to creep in. The number of ADHD diagnoses is rising fast in many countries, among children as well as adults like Lucy, Philip and Sarah, who were all diagnosed in their 30s. Among the patients seen at 26,000 American clinics and hospitals, the share who were newly diagnosed with ADHD rose by 60% from 2020 to 2022. Prescriptions for ADHD medication by England's National Health Service doubled between 2018 and 2023. The rise is down to several factors, including a better understanding of how ADHD affects women and girls, and the fact that its symptoms are proving harder to bear in a distraction-filled world. Timely diagnoses have allowed many who might have suffered in silence to access appropriate and sometimes life-changing medication. But for a growing number of experts, the evolving scientific understanding of ADHD is leading them to question whether it should be seen as a disorder at all. Instead, they say, ADHD may simply represent another point on the spectrum of neurodiversity, the range of different ways of thinking and behaving that count as normal. They point to other, non-pharmaceutical interventions that have been shown to make a difference to people with symptoms, from building a supportive environment that harnesses their strengths to offering tools that help them cope with the challenges of daily life. ADHD is not an easy condition to define. Psychologists often link it to executive function, an umbrella term for working memory, cognitive flexibility, and the ability to inhibit actions and thoughts when necessary. Diagnosis currently relies on a set of questions about inattention, hyperactivity, and impulsivity, as well as the severity of the problems that symptoms cause. Estimates of its prevalence depend on the diagnostic guidelines. By the criteria of the World Health Organization, 1 to 2% of British children and adolescents qualify. By those of the American Psychiatric Association, the rate would be 3 to 9%. Such subjective diagnoses are inevitably imperfect. The ways in which ADHD manifests in girls, for example, have long been overlooked. Boys are 2 to 3 times more likely to have ADHD, but the gender gap in diagnoses has historically been much wider. One reason is that girls are better at finding ways to hide, or mask in the jargon, their inattention, something that was missed by 4 decades of ADHD research focusing on boys and men. Diagnosing ADHD in adults poses its own challenges. A child's physical hyperactivity evolves into inner restlessness. Inattention and disorganisation manifest as struggles with everyday grown-up tasks. The inner restlessness in ADHD can itself be easily mistaken for anxiety. Scientists looking to simplify matters with a checklist of biological markers of ADHD have come up empty-handed. 2 people with ADHD may exhibit similar symptoms caused by entirely different underlying psychological and neurological processes. Imaging studies that have examined the structure and workings of the brain have failed to agree on what, if anything, characterizes the ADHD brain. Studies looking for genetic clues have also revealed little, other than the discovery that ADHD is heritable. It has become more accepted in the past 10 years that it is not a single biological entity, says Edmund Sanuga-Bark, a neuroscientist at King's College London. That may explain why specific psychological interventions, such as therapies to improve working memory, have failed to make a difference. Medication, by contrast, can be highly effective. Psychostimulants, the most commonly prescribed, help with focus and concentration and work immediately. Their effectiveness, says Dr. Sanuga-Bark, probably has to do with the fact that they act on dopamine and norepinephrine receptors, which are found all over the brain. The drugs, in other words, stimulate many of the wide range of brain systems implicated in ADHD symptoms. For people with severe symptoms, they can be life-changing. Recent studies from Sweden have found that medication is linked with lower chances of long-term unemployment in people diagnosed with ADHD, as well as fewer deaths from accidents. But the benefits need to be weighed carefully against the risks. In children, such drugs can affect physical growth and are reserved for severe cases. Side effects in adults include increased risk of psychosis and heart problems, and they can worsen mental health problems. Better long-term solutions may be possible. Some scientists argue that these will involve tackling the arbitrary diagnostic criteria that exist for ADHD and other cognitive and neurobehavioral disorders, such as autism and dyslexia. Symptoms that are common in people with ADHD often occur in those with other such conditions, making it difficult to determine which diagnosis is most appropriate. At the same time, some of the most common symptoms experienced by those diagnosed with one of these conditions are excluded from the diagnostic criteria altogether. Problems with emotional regulation are a case in point for ADHD. To get round these problems, some experts think that children and adults may be better served by a transdiagnostic approach that involves providing help tailored to the individual's specific cognitive, behavioural and emotional difficulties, without bothering with diagnostic labels. Researchers have shown that changes in a person's environment can have dramatic benefits. Children do better in life if parents and teachers provide a supportive, warm environment with structure and rewards for academic and behavioural achievements. For many adults, ADHD symptoms go underground when they are in jobs and relationships that play to their strengths, says Stephen Hinshaw, a psychologist at the University of California at Berkeley. In a paper published on October 16th, Dr. Hinshaw and his colleagues report that 64% of nearly 500 children with ADHD had symptoms that fluctuated over the 16 years during which they were tracked, including periods in which they did not meet the diagnostic criteria for the condition. Far more can be achieved if schools and workplaces are redesigned to accommodate those with symptoms of ADHD, says Nancy Doyle from Birkbeck University, rather than expecting those individuals to adapt to their environments. In schools, closing classroom doors and windows cuts distracting noise. Organising lessons to include standing and moving helps children who find it hard to sit still for a full period. Dr. Doyle, who advises employers on how to accommodate neurodiversity, has found that the things employees with ADHD and other neurodiverse conditions find most helpful are free, such as flexibility to work from home or to choose the hours of the day to spend at the office. Whether such interventions can, on their own, replicate the success of medication remains to be seen. But they could make life easier for the many people with ADHD-like symptoms who turn to medication to fix problems created by their circumstances rather than their biology.